Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
The Romance is a proud member of the But Why The Podcast community. Hi everyone, welcome to a new episode of Beyond the Romance Drama Podcast. I am your host, Carolyn, and today I am joined by a friend and a fellow drama fan, Yatide Badaki, and we will be discussing the new Netflix drama, It's Okay to Not Be Okay. And this one is one that was very popular when it aired from June to August, and it covers a lot of topics like depression, post-traumatic syndrome, manic depressive disorder, and a whole host of other mental illnesses, and we will get into that. But first, I'm going to have Yatide introduce herself and tell us how she got into becoming a fan of drama. So Yatide.
Hey, it is so good to see your face, be it virtually in this new normal. You know how excited I was when you told me that we were going to be discussing dramas, because you know I'm a bit of a fan, just a little bit. Gosh, I think one of the first times I came across the dramas was Coffee Prince. How long? That seems so long ago. And it was, you know, this speaks a lot to the power of the dramas, because it was on a channel, like a public access channel, that, you know, kind of switched up shows and movies from different places in the world. And, you know, depending on the time, you were in a different part of the world. And I used to tune into it every once in a while when I said, hey, I just want, you know, I want to hear something different. Like, I can't physically travel, but I want to, you know, go somewhere else. And I came across Coffee Prince, and I didn't have subtitles, but it was so good. And I was so drawn in by everything that was going on that, I mean, I was just like a repeat customer weekly, like, okay, what's going on? You know, to me, that's the best kind of performance, where I knew exactly what was going on, at least between the characters, the connections and all of those things, without being able to understand a word. So that started me out. And then what really hooked me and just then had me forever was My Love from Another Star. And I am still to this day obsessed with that show. I just did a rewatch about a month or two ago. I'm a fan. I'll stop there.
I'm so happy. We've talked about this before, the first time we met, we talked about our dramas, but I'm so glad we're going to get to discuss this, because the first episode of Beyond the Romance was about Coffee Prince, and that was because they had just recently done a reunion documentary series. It's a two-part series talking about the show, because this year was the 13th anniversary.
Really?
It's 13 years, and is when you watch the show, it was filmed in and released in 2007. When you watch how far the Korean drama industry has progressed, I think they've done an amazing job. But like, Coffee Prince is a classic. It is one of the best shows, and it may be old, but the storyline still holds up. The acting is still really good. And the topics that they discuss, like they talk about homosexuality, gender identity, societal norms and expectations for women and men. And those are topics that are still relevant today. And it really holds up, and you still get emotional, and like, you love the acting, you love the characters. And yes, like you said, like, I've done that before, where I've watched dramas and not have subtitles, and you're still invested in it. You may not be able to understand what they're saying, but the acting is so good. And the music and the directing, everything works so well. You can figure out where the storyline is going, and you just get fully into it. And then you mentioned My Love from the Start. That's one of my all-time favorite Korean dramas. It's so good. That one makes me bawl tears every single time. Oh, the emotion when he disappears. Oh my, the scene on the balcony, my heart, it hurts. And I think it's fitting that you mentioned that, because the show we're going to talk about today, It's Okay to Not Be Okay, stars Kim Soo-yeon, who is the lead actor in My Love from the Start. So My Love from the Start was his last film before he enlisted in the army. And when he came out, he did Hotel de Luna, and then he did this. So It's Okay to Not Be Okay, it's his second series after being discharged. But yeah, My Love from the Stars is a classic. Coffee Prince is a classic. And Kim Soo-yeon is I think he's a fantastic actor. And I think that he's gotten better. He's gotten way better. He was away in army for 2 years, but he came out better than ever. And you can tell that he keeps working, he keeps improving. and his emotional, I think his emotional intelligence as an actor is has grown so much. And there's scenes in this show that breaks your heart. And you're satisfying to spoil you because you've only seen up episode 8. But the beauty of this show is they talk about so many things from the very beginning, from the very first episode. They get into things about mental illness and stigmatization of people who are neurodivergent. So like we have a lot to even talk about from those, but you said we can spoil it, but there's a scene, and I think, I'm not sure, it's episode 9, I believe, where he has this scene where he breaks down and there's this secret is revealed and it's so heartbreaking and he just cries and then he goes to his brother and he apologizes. And I'm like, if he does not get nominated for any kind of acting awards this year for the drama award ceremonies, he's been robbed. He's put in a fantastic performance this year.
He's brilliant because there's this, I mean, he holds this perfect tension. He can give a completely, some may call it like stone face, but then you can see a myriad of things going on within it. But then he will then snap in that next moment. And just like you said, he has these breakdowns with these, and it's just so, for one, it's so well earned that you've been waiting for him to get there and you experience that catharsis with him once he does. So I agree. He absolutely is deserving of all the awards, just all.
Yeah. And before we just get into the show, there's something you mentioned that is a preconception that a lot of North Americans or Westerners, I would say, have of Asian actors. And it's not that you're saying that it's a stereotype, but that you say he has a stony face. And I remember before I really got into dramas, I always used to be a fan of Asian cinema. And I remember I would see people say that, oh, Asians can't act. They're so emotionless. And I'm like, first, that's
no,
a goddamn lie.
No.
But you know, but I've heard that. I've heard people say, I'm like, that's a goddamn lie. If you ever really watch any kind of Asian film, whether it's an action, a drama, a comedy, whatever, they're amazing actors. But I found like when I got started getting into Korean dramas, I saw a lot of comments about that, like on Tumblr and whatever. And I'm like, it's not that they're emotionless. It's that if their character is one that is supposed to be, have a repressed emotion, they're so good at doing it. You think that it's so, but like if you look at the small things, like the tick of a lip, like if they the way they might blink, or just like if you look at their eyes or the tension in their bodies, they're so good at that. I don't think people understand how much energy it takes to not react to something.
Right. Well, I mean, there's so much many intricate levels. And first off, I would definitely never say that, you know, any group of individuals can or cannot do anything. It's just, it made me think of, I believe it was a German performer. Oh, well, I have to go back. But historically, the way that they often approach something, and I have to find the specific one, the specific example, but it was what he reminded me of, was this German performer. Because like you mentioned, there's so many intricacies. There's so many subtleties. Like we are, as just human beings, we often are experiencing several things at the same time. And the ability to layer that as an actor and clearly do so, so that you are then able to pinpoint each of these separate things while in a restrained moment, that is stunning. That is brilliance. And that's why I also love that he works that tension between the restraint and then that release that we, by that point, are just screaming for. But yeah, that's one thing I would definitely, anyone that would say something like that, I you know, I would have some words.
I think what a lot of it is where I find in Asian dramas in particular, especially Korean, and I would say even Japanese dramas, is they don't treat the audience like the audience is stupid. If they're not going to spoon feed you the plot, for one, like they don't telegraph the plot from the very first episode. And by the time you get to it and you're like, oh, I saw that coming. And it's like you thought you may have seen it coming, but it's because they drop little hints. But they don't tell you explicitly. Where I find for Western shows, they you know everything that's going to happen almost from the beginning of the episode. You know what I mean? Like the writing can be so predictable. And even the acting is like, I mentioned this with another friend. Because American shows are season to season, they kind of rely on the fact that even though they don't know necessarily if they're going to come back every season, you never know if you're going to get renewed. But there is this kind of sense of, oh, the people already know our character, so like we don't have to try too hard to give something new to the audience. You know what I mean? And that doesn't happen with every actor. That doesn't happen with every show. But there's sometimes when you watch a show, the actor does nothing new with the character. Whereas I find for Asian dramas, because they have one season, they put everything into it. They're like, we're going to go full out with this performance from the beginning to the very end. Because their formula is you have 12, you have 10, 12, 14, 16 episodes, depending on the network. And they're like, we only have this finite amount of time to tell a story. And we're going to invest everything. And I find that's one of the reasons I enjoy Asian dramas and Korean dramas so much, is because it's very rare that by the end of a show, I think I wasted my time. It has happened where it'd be like, what were you thinking? Like, King Eternal Monarch. I couldn't even finish King Eternal Monarch because I'm like, you people got lost in the plot. Like, they were trying to make the plot so complicated. It was like the writer was trying to do too many things. I'm like, stop, girl. Just, like, stop. Just, you could have put it back a little bit. But most of the times by the end, even if I don't agree with the end, I'd be like, you know what? This watch was worth it. I enjoyed the ride. It was crazy. It was bonkers. It was emotional. But I enjoyed it, right? Even if at the end, I wish it ended, the ride had ended differently. But most of the time, I love how they ended. And this show, I love this show from beginning to end. It's okay, not be okay. So we're going to get into it now. So the plot summary of it is, a road to emotional healing opens for an antisocial children's book, Arthur, and an employee in a psychiatric hospital. The three main characters are Moon Gante, played by Kim Soo-yeon, his brother Moon Sang-tae, played by Oh Jung-sae, and Ko Moon-young, played by So Yi-ji. And these three have some of the best chemistry I've seen with Lee's in a very long time. They work so well together. And the fact that their characters are so different, it's amazing to see how well they actually work together. But then the way how the writing develops, you see how the writer carefully crafted these characters to make you see that even people who seem like they're on the opposite extremes can work together. And like one of the main plots of this show is found family, where family is who you make it. And when you can make family with people who other people don't see you with, they might look at the three of them and say, how can they be a family? But they work so well together. It's like, how else can they be? They are a family. That's what family is. Family is people who are different come together and being there for each other. So that's one of the things I love about the show. So for you, Yatide, what are your cons for, is there anything you've seen so far that you didn't like, whether it's narratively, performance-wise, or anything like that?
Well, I mean, this is just something, first off, look, there's so much that this show does that needs to be lauded, that needs to be given so much credit for. Just the fact that we are opening up these discussions that I think are absolutely necessary. I mean, even that title, It's Okay to Not Be Okay. That is something we all really need to hear right now. But I did find, in regards to cons, and this is something that I think across the board industry-wise that we're all guilty of, is in representation for disability, actually having individuals who are from the community representing their story. I think that's something that we have to look at. It's not just in dramas, it's across the board. This is something that, I mean, we just saw an example come up here with Sia's project. So that was something for me that was a con, that I would have liked to have seen representation by community. So that's the main one for me. And then there's also, I love that we're speaking about a lot of the scars and opening up things about wounds and trauma and the ways that those things are passed down. However, in at least the earlier parts, there is some question in the things that would be acceptable to individuals within a relationship with certain boundaries, certain things. And this is, I mean, it's part of the plot. It's being worked through. We're understanding where all of this is coming from. But I remember there were certain moments where before they clarified why an individual did something, I was a little horrified by the action.
anything specific you'd like to mention?
Okay, so before this was expanded upon, and many incredible points were then brought up, but when she created the contract, and then the brothers are fighting, and there was all of that, and that moment before I saw the next episode, I went, that's just diabolical. I went, that's horrific. I don't know if I can forgive you for that. Then it was then exploring agency as well in ways that I hadn't thought of. And so then the next moment, you know, brought in some more important points of discussion. But yeah, when that initially happened, I was about to, I said, you lost me, girl, because I was about to try and be by your side. But that was a lot, a lot.
Yeah, the two things you mentioned are two of my biggest cons with the show. Starting with talking about representation, because one of the main characters, Woo Sang-hae, played by Oh Jung-soo, is autistic. He's on the autism spectrum and he's high functioning. But I wish he could have been played by an autistic actor. But because this show is South Korean, and Greg, I'm going to be perfectly blunt with you. Things like autism, developmental disorders, and mental illness are still very much stigmatized in South Korean society. They're still stigmatized in the West and also in the Southeast Asia and all over the world. But in South Korea, it's now becoming more acceptable to discuss those things. And that's why this show is one of the reasons the show is so extremely popular, not only in North America, where it aired on Netflix, but also in South Korea, because people are finally saying we can have discussions about people with autism, people with developmental disorders. But because of their society, I don't think there might be any actors that are, that I know of, are publicly acknowledged that they're on the spectrum. So even if they are on the spectrum, they might not say I'm on the spectrum. You know what I mean? So even if they're actors,
and I would say the same here.
Right? So we would love for them, for actors that are on the spectrum, to play characters like this, but you can only cast them if they exist within the industry. Whereas in America, we know there are actors who are on the spectrum. There are autistic actors. There are actors with physical disabilities who can play roles in North America. But for South Korea, it could be a bit more challenging. But I think with a show like It's Okay, I'll Be Okay, I think it might create a push to include them in the industry more, to give them the space to become actors. So I'm hoping that we have more of that, because one of the beauties of this show is the actor, Oh Jung-sae, he actually met a young man who is on the spectrum, who's a cellist. He's a professional cellist. And his sister contacted the actor, and she said, my brother loves your character. And he met him in person, and his mother and his sister were like, this is the first time he's related to a character on screen. This is the first time he's related to a human character on screen. And it was a really big deal in South Korea too, because the actor, he met with the young man and he stayed in character, because like the sister explained that the brother wanted to meet Moon Sang-hae. So the actor, he met him as Moon Sang-hae, and they spent a whole day at this amusement park. And when I read that at first, I was thinking, oh, okay, is it that he's performing? But it wasn't that he was performing. It was what the young man wanted. The sister explained that this was how he related to the characters. So yeah. I'm just hoping the door continues to open more and more and more. And since these kind of topics are being discussed more and more in dramas, I think that is going to create a positive change. And my second con is, I had a problem with agency as well, where she did the whole contract thing and had him sign it. But then I really love that they brought it back in the second episode, and they address it throughout the rest of the season, where they talk about agency and where you see how Moon Young learns what she did is wrong, and she learns how to relate to people. My other biggest issue was how they didn't really allow, especially early in the season, how they didn't really allow Gang-tae to be sad. Like anytime he was upset, anytime he felt he was wrong, he wasn't really allowed to sit in that, because people were like saying, think of other people. Like especially with his mom, he had, you know, he has very complicated feelings with his mom, because his mom would say, oh, I give birth to you so you can help look after your brother. And that created the thing with him, where he thought that his only purpose in life is to look after his brother. And I understood, and he's upset. He like, imagine a child thinking that their only purpose in life is to be a caretaker for their autistic brother, who is older than him. Like he's 5 years older. So he was upset, and there's this scene, and I think you've probably seen it, where he's crying and he's upset. But and then like this lady who's a mother figure says, but think about your mom. I'm like, this is not the point right now. That you should be comforting him.
That's not healthy.
Exactly. Don't tell him to consider his mother's feelings. That is another issue for another day. We're talking about Gang-tae's feelings now. Like, can we just acknowledge the man is hurt and he has reason to be hurt?
You know, I'm going to bring up that same scene, because there are several things I actually loved in that. One of the things that I loved in that scene was because his buddy did give him time to be upset and did go, yeah, you're upset. And so was then angry for him. I thought that was lovely and beautiful. And also just you know, seeing this kind of affection between guys that it's okay to just be open and to feel. I thought that was beautiful. And I love that she sat down and had the, you know, a beer with them. I thought that was interesting as well. But from that grew another moment where he then started to look back at his memories and then started to see different parts of it. I thought that was fascinating. I mean, it is a show that is talking about a lot of how the mind works. And I thought that him being able to revisit moments that he'd only seen pain in, and then was able to see that there had been more light around those moments than he had, you know, had previously seen. I thought that was an interesting shift, but I agree. I'm like, yes, let him feel sad. Like he shouldn't have to take on everybody's feelings and everybody's, you know, concerns and look out for everyone. He should be able to feel what he feels, because pretty much all the time, he was perfectly entitled to it.
Right. And it was upset because I'm like, he's known as being, like you mentioned, stony faced and stoic, because that's how he trained himself to be. He thought that in order to be able to survive, in order to look after each other, in order to do what needed to be done, he couldn't react. He had to bottle everything up instead. And there's a word that is used a lot in South Korean dramas, and I think this is also a societal norm. It's a word they use. It's called endure. They're like, just endure it. Bottle up whatever anger, sadness, grief, upset you have. Bottle it, push it way, way deep down, and just endure and push forward. And that's something he's been doing for 20 years, because he was looking after Sang-tae from the time he was 12, 13 years old. And he's been doing this for 20 years. And there's one moment, the first time we were seeing him really, really get into his feelings and let it all out, his friend is telling him it's okay to be sad. It's okay to cry. And it's so important to see two men being comfortable, emotional together. And one of your friends encouraging the other one to be emotional. And then you have this woman who's a mother figure coming and telling her, think about your mom. That just upset me so much. It really upset me, because I'm like, don't bite his emotional moment, lady. And it happens a few times in this season where there are moments where he is, and it happens with her quite often. And I thought it was, I'm believing that that's purposely done by the writer to show that sometimes women, the mother figures, sometimes they're so caught up in their own identity as a mother that they can only consider things for them from the maternal perspective. They can't consider things from the child's perspective, because it happens with her. Like there's like two or three other scenes in the series that happens. So I saw that as the writer saying that sometimes mothers can only identify so much with others.
But also maybe a thing of how often have women been told to do that over generations? Been told to just endure and be there for others. And so, I mean, that's something that in regards to her kept on popping up when I would see her say those things.
So this is where we're going to get into the positives of the show, because those things we mentioned are cons, but the way how the writer does such a fantastic job of turning things that could be negatives into positive, because she makes you think about things from different perspectives. And like one of the things you mentioned is the same scene we were discussing where the mother comes in and interrupts him and tells him to think about his mother. Her doing that was upsetting to me, but the way how the writer changes it, and the director did a fantastic job with how they filmed the scenes, where the flashback scenes, he did a brilliant job filming these, is where it shows you perspective. How as children, we see one thing, but then when we grow up as adults, we can see things from a different perspective. And it shows how our emotions can impact how we perceive things. And he was so sad and hurt and distraught about the thing, the memory of the mother saying, I had you so you can look after your brother, that he didn't remember what she said after that. And he only remembered the scenes where she kind of berated him for not looking after his brother good enough. He only remembered the scenes where it looked like the mother was paying more attention to Sang-tae than to him. He only had memories of the moments where he thought he was being left behind. But because of what the lady said, he was able to think back and say, okay, so my mom did say this, but then she also did say that she loved me too. So my mom did leave me behind, but then she called me to be a part of her and Sang-tae. My mom did ignore me, but then later in the night, she hugged me and gave me a kiss goodnight and told me she was sorry. I thought that was amazing, because I'm like, okay, you brought it back. You flipped the script, and I just love that.
Yeah, no, it's so brilliantly done. And this is one of the things that I love about watching things from all around the world and hearing different viewpoints, it just solidifies what makes good writing, what makes good performance, what makes good viewing. Because I'm from Nigeria and I'm sitting here watching this and completely identify, because it's just so beautifully woven together, so expertly done. And I do love that, because we all went on the journey with him of Gante, of him feeling excluded. And then the new perspective comes in and we go, oh yes, obviously there was that perspective too. It's just, that was a stroke of brilliance, the way that they put that all together. And we haven't even started to talk about the effects. I mean, that was one of the first things watching this show, of, you know, all the graphics that started out with and this melding of fairy tale with reality. It's just stunning. And so I remember just immediately being caught up by that, going, what is this? I didn't even know. I was even wondering what genre I was watching at that point, because the way that they bring the fairy tales in and they ground it in our experience, in our lived experience, it's one of my favorite things about the show.
Yeah, I watched the show when it aired, and then for my rewatch this weekend to prepare for our discussion, it started, and I was like thinking, this is so perfect to discuss with Yatiti, because of your film in Hollywoodland. It made me think of how you can take a fairy tale that people normally look at in a positive light and show how you can use fairy tales and to call it magical realism, and show how society puts us or certain interpretations on, where they're like, oh, this story is dramatic and beautiful. And they're like, no, really, it's not. It's a story about Stockholm Syndrome.
Beauty and the Beast.
Beauty and the Beast.
I've been saying that forever.
And they love, and I was like, this is so perfect that you've been discussing tea, because from the very beginning, the opening, it gave you this fairy tale feel. Like, some people would call it Tim Burton, because it looks similar to things like Corpse Bride, and like how he does the animation and that kind of stuff. So the beginning kind of gives you this feel of, this is going to be like super dark and I think it is dark, and it does have these fairy tale elements. So from, I love the opening sequence with the animation, and then how they interpret a fairy tale into real life works so beautifully. And it happens in very little bit. So it happens in the set design, especially for her house, her mansion is gorgeous. And you feel like you're in this, you feel like you're in like Beauty and the Beast's mansion. And then like the way she dresses like lavishly, and she wears these, like, when I've gone online and I've looked at some of her costumes, like some of the dresses she's worn, these things are expensive.
Well, they look expensive.
And I always gotta give props to the costume department and the set design. The production team did a fantastic job of this show. And her shoes, I love shoes. And I want almost every single pair of shoes she's put on, and I want almost all of her outfits. But it works, because she does feel like this princess trapped in this mansion, and she feels like this princess who is outside in the world, but she doesn't know how to get along. And this is because she has antisocial personality disorder. And I love that they named it. I love that it's mentioned more than once, because they're keep reminding you she is not quote unquote normal, and there is a reason for this. And I love that they keep reminding the audience that people are autistic, that people are depressed, that people have these disorders. And you know, they don't say it one off and then expect you to remember. They're like, like, they give it in little ways, and it reminds you, these people behave this way for a reason. And like, especially for her, because of her disorder, she seems very cold and very standoffish, and she seems cruel. Especially in the first episode, you're like thinking, this lady got an edge to her. She got a bite. And I love that her hardness is juxtaposed by her beauty. And she's always wearing these soft clothes, like all of her lot of her silks and satins and chiffon, and her hair is like, I love her herself, but then I love how they juxtapose that with her personality, and the actress did a fantastic job with that. And from beginning to end, they really put their all into the show. And as I mentioned, like, one of my biggest pluses with this show is how they address people with mental illnesses and are neuroatypical or neurodivergent. Never once are people looked down upon. And the only time they happens, there's like two instances where it happens in the entire show. And that has to do with how this family looks at their son. So he's the youngest son, and he's looked down upon because he calls himself dumb or slow, but I think he's probably like something like dyslexic. But
I think it's a learning disorder.
Yeah, but he's also officially diagnosed as having manic depressive disorders. And his family doesn't understand him. His way he copes with not being understood, and the way how he copes with being ignored by them, is to act out. When he becomes manic, he acts out and he's big and he does like these lavish things. And you mentioned the special effects, and the special effects plays into this character so well. How they use it for him is brilliant, and especially the scene with the car and everything. But when they give the reverse to that scene, like the show, when they showed you, like, he's recounting it, so it seems like this, he's at this party and everything's all exciting. But then when they bring it back at the end of the episode, it shows you in reality how sad it is, because he's, I cried both times I watched this. Because it shows you how these people, in the, he just wants to be loved. He just wants to be accepted. And he can't get that because he's different to his family. And I love that the show says his feelings matter. And that he doesn't deserve to be treated the way he's treated. And they tell him, you don't deserve to be treated this way. And he has love that they showed them standing up for him and giving him the time to finally tell his family what he's feeling.
And that's the interesting thing about that juxtaposition of fairy tales and the gritty reality, because like you mentioned, they did that with In Hollywood Land, but I feel fairy tales have been doing that from the get-go, introducing really dark, hard truth in a lighter, more digestible format, so to speak, or that they just give enough of a spin to it that then we're able to take it in without immediately being repelled by the difficulties that might come with it. So I think they did it perfectly with this show. They spoke about a lot of things that are really touchy for a lot of us, a lot of things that people may be afraid to even address. I mean, that dynamic that he had with his family, that was... yeah, that hit me too. Though, again, we have to talk about these incredible performances because... he did such a beautiful job, had you immediately empathizing with him. But with using the special effects, using this tool of the fairy tale, they hit on a really painful truth. And it's something, again, that globally, I think a lot of individuals can empathize with, if not feel resonate deeply. And time again, with each episode, again, you speak about her personality disorder. I think they so effectively use the pages of her own books as well to dive into who she is and what she's experiencing, because a lot of it she's unable to express to the world.
Mm-hmm. I have to acknowledge the actor that we're referring to is Kwang Dong-yoon, and the character he played is Kwang Gi-do. So he's a character with manic depressive disorder. And what they do so brilliantly in the show is another thing is where you have these individuals who are patients at the psychiatric hospital that Gang-tae works at, that their situations kind of play into the three main characters' lives. And I think Gi-do is kind of similar to Moon-young in the fact that they both act out because they want to be noticed. They both act out because they want people to acknowledge them, not because they crave attention, but they just want to know that somebody sees them. You know, that somebody just acknowledges that they exist and that they matter too. And the same thing for Gante, like there's a scene where he sees himself as Gi-do for just a moment where he's like, he wishes he could be as free as Gi-do. He wishes that he could be as honest in that one moment. He's like, I just want to be able to tell people that I'm hurting. I just want to be able to tell people that I'm in pain. And that happens because in the first episode, we see Gante has scars. And he has scars on his back and his chest because at the second hospital that he works at, he works with the patients. And when they lash out, he's the first person that gets hurt because as the nurse, he's the person who has to come in and calm them down. And the patients don't care whether they hurt him or not, right? Mm. But people, and I thought it was so interesting. So his hand is being bandaged after being sliced. And the doctor tells him, oh, you hurt yourself again. I'm like, no, he did not hurt himself again. It was a patient that hurt him. And it's kind of like this small moment, but it's something that actually occurs throughout the season, but it happens with different people where these people aren't hurting themselves. Other people are hurting them, but the people are like, oh, you kind of put yourself in a situation. No, they never asked to be hurt. No one ever asks to be hurt. No one ever asks to receive the scars that they have. But then there's some people who are so what's the word, ignorant to reality, where they just can't be willing to acknowledge that they may have played a part in hurting others. They'll be like, oh, you have another scar. Okay, yeah, but how did he get that scar?
How did he get the scar? That's exactly. The
question, right? And that's yeah. some and that's the one of the main things with this show, because a lot of when they talk about mental illness, many people, a lot of people's mental illnesses, some there are some they may have been born with, like the antisocial personality disorder, that's something she was born with. But then there's some that they develop because of the situation, because of their life. Like for Guido, he developed his manic disorder after, because of the abuse that he suffered at the hands of his family. But they don't care that they hurt him. They blame him for being sick, but they don't care that they're the ones who caused his illness.
Listen, I think the show goes all in speaking about mental health, because then you have to wonder about his mother's mental health. And this is not me saying that it excuses anything that they do, but as I'm watching that scene and she's slapping him, attacking him, and I'm going, oh, lady, you need a lot of help too. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't actually refer to that character, her character, as mentally healthy either, or his father. So I thought the show was really smart in doing that. That it's also pinpointing, yes, it's the individuals that actually come in for treatment, but then what about all the ones around that really should be in there too? So I thought it was beautiful that they were bringing it up. And again, this whole theme of, you know, people and the scars and the wounds and opening up to them and opening up about them. And then you mentioned connecting. Those moments throughout where, whether it's two friends connecting, whether it's brother to brother connecting, whether it's a man and a woman connecting romantically, I mean, even speaking about it right now, I get goosebumps. Because it speaks to the fact that the vulnerability that all these individuals show allows those moments to happen. It speaks to the fact that we're talking about a show that says it's okay to not be okay. And if you're ever in a position with individuals that you can say those words to each other and it can be received, there is a connection and there's an intimacy that's created. So yeah, I'm sitting in my goosebumps right now, because every time the show did that, every time people connected, it was so beautifully orchestrated, but it was also deeply anchored in the fact that connection needs that vulnerability in order to occur.
Yeah, and especially it happens like because the three main characters, Monsante, Moncante, and Komunyang, the three of them, they are like, people would say they're damaged, but they're not damaged, they're just hurt. And I think that's one of the things this show is trying to tell people. That yeah, we say it's okay to not be okay, but then we also, I think what it's also telling people is be aware of where the hurt is coming from and acknowledge that. And one of the things this happens is because for the main plot centers around the three of them, and it happens because Sante is, as you mentioned, is autistic, and he's a high-functioning autistic. He's verbal. He's able to be in society. He does have moments where he spirals out, where he has anxiety episodes where he's not able to function. But what the show is showing you is both perspectives of people who are autistic and the people who have to look after them. But they don't do it in the whole what people call the savior trope, where you are expected to be praised for looking after this person who is autistic, or a person who has a mental developmental disorder, a person who's physically disabled. Because we know that happens a lot. We've seen it especially a lot in Western films and TV shows, where the person who has to look after someone that relies help, that needs help, the caregiver is propped up as being, oh, the savior, you're an angel. Like you deserve all of this praise for bearing this, like we would use the term enduring this, for putting up with this. Whereas in this instance, they're showing you it's a fact of life. It's like he's not expecting praise. What Dante is expecting is support and understanding when he is overwhelmed. That's what it is, especially for him, because he started so young. But it also shows you how people with disabilities or people who are on the spectrum or mentally ill also should not be expected to get away with treating anyone out horribly. Because there are moments where Sante does treat Gante very badly.
Right.
Part of that does have to do with how he's not able to understand emotions in a certain way, and how he's frustrated. But there are points where he does things because he's a bit mean. And he does it because he consciously does things that he knows is going to hurt his brother. And I love that the show acknowledges that people like him have free will. They're able to make conscious decisions. every action they have should not be excused. And that's something that I personally kind of relate, because I'm dyslexic and I have physically dyslexic, I have MS and stuff. But I grew up, when I was diagnosed with dyslexia, they did put me in what you would call the special ed class with kids who were on the spectrum, kids who have cerebral palsy. So I grew up around people who are on the spectrum, who are divergent. I've never seen them as different to anyone else. Whereas people who aren't in those situations where they are, where either they work with them, go to school with them, or live with them, they see people who are different as something to either be avoid or people to, they're not willing to understand. Where this show is actually saying the opposite. They're saying, they don't say, I want you to accept me, because there's nothing that should be accepted. They just are. It's also saying there's nothing wrong with being different.
Right.
It's more of addressing society's stigmatization of people.
Exactly.
Who are quote unquote not normal.
Mm-hmm. I mean, but I always say, what is normal? I mean, the term itself drives me a little, you know, it's such a strange concept to me, because then who decides what that is? And then we're going into all kinds of preconceived notions and structures created in order to sustain a status quo. But all that aside, you know, I'm going to take this actually all the way back to, you were mentioning costuming. Mm. And those beautiful, beautiful designs that she gets to wear. And you mentioned that a lot of the dresses are reminiscent of a princess. But I also feel that some are, it feels that she's interchangeable at times. She's both the princess and the witch.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of goes back. And so it also happens in her actions that in sometimes she is seeming more what we think of what the princess would be. And then other times she does something that seems a little more on the witch side of things. And then often in the next moment, they turn it on its head. So for example, the moment that I mentioned where she had Sante sign the contract and I was livid. I said, how could she? I was like, you're taking advantage. You're doing this. You're doing everything to get what you want. But then Wang Gangte tore up the contract and his brother comes at him and he says, I'm my own person. I can make my decision. You know, you don't own me. I had to have a discussion with myself in that moment where I went, wow, why did I assume that that's not what he wanted?
Mm-hmm.
And that this is something, and so that's where it came to agency, where maybe sometimes Gangte not meaning to, but he's used to being, like, that's his position, caregiver. And so I feel that sometimes he puts Sangte in a position that he needs to continue to be cared for, as opposed to actually hearing what Sante wants.
Mm-hmm.
And actually giving him agency to, I mean, yes, we see him realize after that and having a discussion with our mother figure again, that he does need to champion his brother through this and he needs to see his perspective. But that did open my eyes because it hadn't occurred to me originally in that moment. And I realized that was something then that I had to examine. And that, again, this show so brilliantly brought to light. I was happy to see that happen. And so, but that was a moment where I saw her as the witch and she was being the princess, really. She was being this, the more of the savior. And the same with, there was another lady in the hospital who kept on saying that she was her mother.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe she yelled so much at this woman and that the woman passed out, but she actually got her to face reality, right? So again, it was another moment where you could perceive her as taking on the role of the witch, but in many ways she was being the role of the savior. Well, savior is not the word, the princess. We'll use princess for that.
I agree, because the thing with Moon Young, because as I mentioned, she has antisocial personality disorder, she's not able to relate to people how people who don't have that disorder relate to each other. But that's the beauty of her. And I think that's the beauty of people like her. They're able to see people differently. I think she's an emotional genius. Like we say, you know how people have emotional intelligence? She's a genius because she's able to assess situations. She saw things that even the psychiatrist didn't even see. And like you mentioned, the lady that saw herself as Muñoz's mom. And the reason that happened is her daughter had died, and the grief that she had from her daughter dying and the guilt that she had that went along with that caused her to emotionally detach from reality, where she created this delusion where her daughter was still alive. And then when she saw Muñoz, she was like, oh, you came back as my daughter. And Muñoz, people saw her as being mean, but it wasn't that she was being mean. She saw that this lady was holding on to her grief so much that it was actually killing her, because where she's in this delusion, she's not able to exist in reality, and she's getting sicker and sicker the longer she was in this delusion. And Muñoz saw that. And she did have to tell the lady that she's not her daughter, not only for that lady's well-being, but also for her, because she had her own trauma with her own mother. And she emotionally could not have anyone coming up to her saying, I'm your mom. Because imagine someone like her having the traumatic past that she had, and this woman is coming up saying to her, like, just the word mother is almost like a trigger for her. Like, it makes her upset. Mm-hmm. So she was doing that for her own well-being. And people couldn't even understand that. I'm like, do people not understand why this girl would be upset with some strange lady saying, I'm your mother? Because remember, like, for just a second, she was like, wondering, are you really my mother? She was wondering, because she's always believed that her mother really wasn't dead. So for a minute, she's thinking, are you really my mother? And it showed you that she was still missing her mother, and it showed you that she's still vulnerable about this, and that she may be harsh and cruel, but she's really not. She uses all of that as her armor. But then she sees that this lady is struggling, and she just tells her, you need to let your daughter go. And she tells her this story of the cheerful dog, which is this dog that has been chained to this tree, and he plays with the kids during the day, and at night he's so sad. And this little girl asked him, why don't you just cut the leash? And he was like, I forgot that I even had the capability to do that. I forgot that I lost the will to even free myself. And she tells this lady the story. And then she tells the lady, give me the shawl that your daughter gave you. And she does. And she did that because she saw that this shawl was the leash that was holding this lady to her point. And I'm like, this is so well done. And like, there's other moments like this where she sees where someone needs help. She gives them the permission almost to do what they need to do for them to free themselves.
Right. I think it's because she goes right through the BS.
Yes, she does.
Right? Because most of the time, and everyone trying to live in the constructs, you know, we're all trying to uphold the construct while trying to approach an individual through it. And she just has a clear path right through. Mm. And so, yes, oftentimes it looks like she is taking on the role of the witch, but she is then able to actually address the problem. And perhaps it's also because she recognizes those things within herself. I love, talking about performance moments, points, an image that sticks in my head is of her in sleep paralysis and the right and the witch slash, you know, is hovering over the top of her. And it's just that performance, that image of her just being stuck there, but she's terrified, and you see it in every inch of her. You know, I hope she gets some nods as well, some awards nods as well, because she's exquisite.
Yeah, Soya G, she is a fantastic actress. I love her voice. Her voice is so smooth.
Beautiful.
And I love the way she uses it as an actress, because I've seen her in some other projects, and she uses her voice in very interesting ways. There's a show called Lawless Lawyer where she uses her voice almost to deceive people, where people expect one thing and she's like, you know, like this way she soothes people. And she does the same thing in this show where her voice can use it almost like this hypnotic way where she's talking like she's trying to seduce you, and she's like trying to control you into doing something she wants. And then she'll flip, and then it just sounds hard and emotionless. And she's so brilliant at that. Yeah. But at that scene that you mentioned, she is phenomenal in that scene. And actually, I read an interview with the writer, Jo Young. She said that was actually her favorite scene with Soyu Ji, because she says she said it gave her goosebumps. The way she holds her body, and you can see the abject terror on her face, and you can see her body trying to get between flight or fight. And she does it so well. And then Gante comes in, and she's holding on to him, and she's telling him to leave. You have to leave, you have to run. she's saying one thing, but her body is saying something else completely. And I'm like,
yes. It's beautiful. I love what she's like, you have to leave, you have to leave. And he's like, okay, I won't leave. That moment was just stunning.
Yeah, and that's the thing. The two of them, I think Moonyoung, Gante, and Sangtae, they read each other so well. They know sometimes what they're hearing isn't necessarily the truth. And for Moonyoung, she reads Sangtae in a completely different way. She looks beyond his autism.
Yeah.
She literally treats him as the way she does everyone else.
Everybody else.
Like, the two of them are so petty together. And I'm like, they work perfectly. They're like a twin. They're like me and my sister. Like, we're always bickering. And I think that's because they see what they need in each other so well. And they just see each other so well. And she also gives Gante what he needs. She allows him to be upset when he needs to be. She gives him permission to be upset. Yeah. She's the one that tells him, if you want to be selfish. And she tells him to make your decision. If you're going to be like an after brother, do it. But also make sure that you're doing it for you and for him as well. And for Sangtae, because he's an illustrator and she's an author, she gives him his dream. She's like, we're going to make this book and your dream is going to come true. And he also gives her the dream of finally writing a happy ending. She's all her fairy tales that she wrote were depressing and dark and they never had good endings. But he gave her her dream to finally be able to have a happy ending. And I just love this show. And I wish we could go into this more. But I know you got to go soon. You're back. And so we're going to give our overall thoughts for the show and the performances.
Yeah.
And then we're going to see if there's anything else that we're watching and anything else you'd like to promote.
Yeah, no, it's, it's definitely, I hope that this ushers in a lot more of this much needed discussion across the board. And like you mentioned, I also hope that it makes people aware that we need to open up pipeline for our incredible disabled community, for all the different areas in our community that are underrepresented on screen, so that people can actually perform their experiences. But I do think, in watching it, I did feel like it was on the vanguard of something, that it was shining a light on something that maybe we hadn't really been paying attention to before. So other shows that My Hollow Love. I also watched some of Hotel Luna, but then I got a little scared at one episode, so I stopped for a bit. Hotel de Luna, right? Yeah, I stopped for a bit, but I will pick it up again. I'll just probably watch in the daytime. And of course, I'm due for a rewatch of My Love from the Stars because it is still one of my favorites of all time.
And anything you'd like to promote for In Hollywoodland? Is this still being screened at any festivals?
Yes. If you go to our website, the In Hollywoodland website, we have all of our screenings, including our trailer on there. And you'll be able to see where we're popping up next, because we've been very lucky. We've gotten a really incredible response on this one. So I think there's two more that we should be announcing pretty soon. Don't quote me on that. I have to go double check on the schedule.
I will be liking that.
Yes, but you can find me on all the socials. You can find me on Twitter at Yetide Badaki. That's YETIDEBADAKI. And you can find me on Instagram at Yetide.
Thank you so much for speaking to me. And so everyone, before I go, I'm going to just do my plugs. You can listen to my discussion with Yetide and the director of In a Hollywood Land, Jessica Sharif, and one of the producers and one of the actors in the film, Karen David, on here on butwhythepodcast.com. And you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at CarrieCNH, CARIECNH12. And you can find the virtual roundtables I've been doing with the African American Film Critics Association, where we speak to Black film and television creatives, on their YouTube channel. And recently we've been doing interviews with David Talbert and his wife, Lynn Cecil Talbert, about their new film, Jingle Jangle, which is on Netflix.
Jingle Jangle.
Yeah, it's really fun. And then we also did roundtables with the cast of two of the Small Axe films, Mangrove and Lover's Rock. Before I go, I have to shout out the director of It's Okay to Not Be Okay, Park Shin-woo, and the writer, Jo Young. They did a fantastic job with this series. Everyone, go look it up. It's on Netflix. And please wear a mask and be safe. And Yetide, thank you so much for
thank you for letting me geek out on the dramas, because I'm a fan.